Well, speaking of carrying heavy burdens, something's happening. You never know what for what reason, but every week the bulletin that you have in your hands is made bigger so that it can fit into my nice little three-ring binder. And sometimes when you make the thing bigger in the bulletin or in the copier, it does funny things. And so today it was pretty funny that just as I was reading along in the second lesson, great job reading by Linda, but in that line where it says, every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God, the letters H-E-R got taken off the copier. So if you take H-E-R off of Father, what do you get? Okay, Father, take H-E-R off the end, what do you get? Yeah. My bulletin says, to the glory of God, the fact. Now, when you talk about God being able to be strong enough and to handle and big enough to handle all of our concerns and worries, perhaps that was most appropriate. God's just that big guy who can handle and take all the things that concern us. Well, in today's text from Matthew, it begins with this whole question and answer thing, but it starts with people came to him and said, by what authority are you doing these things? And if you haven't read Matthew 21 this morning, you might forget what those things are in chapter 21. The things that he was doing was right before that was, he went into the temple and saw people selling stuff and flipped the tables over, scattered coin all over the place. If it were today, he would have been the one smashing the scan machines and their debit scanners and just smashing them to pieces with some kind of metal object. He goes into the temple and sees this event and just screams, you're turning the temple into an awful place. That's not what he wanted. So that being happened right before this, he goes from the entry area where they're doing all this selling and buying of stuff, goes right into the temple. He wants to go into the temple so he can worship, as he would normally do, but he gets stopped. The chief priests, the elders, like the pastors and the council members, want to have a word with this guy, Jesus. And they basically ask him, so, who told you that you could do this? Who made you the boss of those guys? Well, fortunately, Jesus is not only our Savior and Lord and all that kind of thing, but he's also a pretty smart guy. He knows that some kind of game is afoot. And so he kind of does this little dance with the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. Basically says, yeah, well, I got a question for you. And if you don't answer, I don't have to tell you the answer to your question. He gets to quiz them before he'll answer the question that they want. So he gives them a little pop quiz about John the Baptizer. And they fall for it. They actually let him go, thinking, well, okay, yeah, he's asked us a question. We can handle it. We're pretty smart people. We can do it. So indeed, in verse 25, did the baptism of John come from heaven, or was it of human origin? Now, you have to think, well, maybe this is kind of like a trick question. Maybe it's something that isn't quite, legit, maybe. It's kind of like when you ask somebody, oh, by the way, have you quit smoking? So no matter how you answer that question, it doesn't make you look very good. So after they kind of did this kind of little dance in their little group, well, if we say this, the crowd's be mad. If we say that, he won't like the answer. What are we going to do? They chose no answer. One thing I didn't like about things that happen on my favorite show, Jeopardy, is when people would, at the end, say they had no answer. I mean, come on, at least come up with something. You see, their answers are based on human opinion. They're afraid of their own answer of faith. or they're afraid of the crowd. They're stymied. Jesus will not give them the answer. He won't give them an answer for their questions. Why doesn't he just tell them? I mean, really, just Jesus, go ahead, just give them the answer. By what authority? Tell them where John's coming from. Come on, Jesus, just tell them. Why not? Well, he doesn't because they are so worried, fixated, if you would, on the past, on keeping their places, keeping the same thing. They just can't see the future opening up. The man was right there in front of their eyes, and they couldn't see him. The future of God was opening up right in front of them. Life opening up. They just couldn't see it. They couldn't see that what they were doing with in the temple was selling things was inappropriate. You see, the more they tried to control the future, it just slipped away from them. The past for them was about answers, but the future in Jesus is about action. Not being afraid of what's been done before. Or not thinking, well, I'm not worthy because of this or that I've done before. None of that kind of worry. Didn't want them worried about the past, those burdens that we gave for the children especially. They want to know who controls the future. So he tells them this little story about the two sons. He tells in this story about tax collectors and prostitutes and how they actually fare better. Not because they're better people, per se, but it appears that when they meet Jesus, the future opens up and it's looking brighter. These are people that are definitely cast off in terms of society. These are people who are told they don't belong. These are people who are told they're not good enough to be in with them. These are the people in society who are down and out. These are the people who are discovering that their identity has been created by their past because of what society has told them how they ought to. And so they're dying until they meet Jesus. People who are burdened by their past and think that, okay, what I have been definitely identifies who I am, haven't met Jesus yet. Those particular categories, tax collectors and prostitutes, were the ones who are definitely outside the limits of society. So we have to think about that for ourselves. Who controls what part of your past? Who controls what part of your past that you remember? Who controls what part of the past that can be changed? In a sense, who controls the future? See, the text often people think, oh, it's about not just words but action. But see, it's not about words versus action. It's about what God does to make it all happen. How God opens up the future even for those totally kicked out of society. See, in the parable, Jesus emphasizes the one who saw the future. Yeah, at first he didn't want to go do what Dad said. But somehow he saw the future. That there's a better way, there's a better life. He could see beyond his past and how he wanted to keep resisting against his dad's stuff. But finally he sees the future. And Jesus lauds that movement. He lauds that freedom opening up, those burdens cast off and saying, yeah, I'm moving ahead to the future. Where is that for us? Where are those burdens that perhaps we've carried? What kind of things have we had to struggle with and dragged our past? Perhaps some of us are dealing with past abuses, alcoholism, other drug abuse, hurts, damage, being called damaged goods. Perhaps you've been the problem in your family, or the lost sheep, or the odd woman out, or picked last for the softball team. Perhaps that burden gets pretty heavy. And sometimes it seems like we just can't cast them off, and they're too much for us. But see, Jesus points right to those of us, perhaps all of us, dealing with those burdens that says, you know, we want to move on. And so Christ removes it. What he does is he gives them this little story as a vision of, you know what? The future is open for us. Our future is not owned by the prison guards. It's not owned by doctors who say, you have this much to go. The future is God's. The authority, the answer to all the questions in our text, is God. He opens the future, and we find out later, he opens the future because he rose his son from the dead. And that's why we gather on Sunday. Not because it's a nice thing to do, or mom told me I ought to go, or I've always come here just because I always come here, and this is, I have nothing else to do on Sunday. We come here to celebrate the future of God, the victory over past, victory over the death, victory over the devil, victory over evil. And that's why when we can, when, shall we say, leaders allow us, we have a meal here, a meal we call the Eucharist. It's a meal where the future is seen, smelled, tasted, felt. It's where Jesus promised that, by the way, in this bread and wine, it's going to be me in the future. There, the night in which he was betrayed, Jesus saying, oh, by the way, the future is open. That bread and wine, that's me being opening your future again. It's a little taste, I understand. It's just a little bit of bread, a little bit of wine, or a little grape juice, but it's about opening our future, unbinding our past. That whatever people think who we were in the past doesn't matter anymore. We're bold enough to say that stuff. See, some may focus on that it's about the doing and the talking. It's not that in this text. Who sees the future? And Christ tells us it's more than who you have been. Tax collectors, prostitutes, some of the worst in society at the time, they can see the future. Because it's what's happening now for you. If you sense some kind of burden relieved, you know what I'm talking about. If you sense that perhaps something you've done in the past isn't going to burden you anymore, because of what Christ has said about you being a child of God, then you're freeing some burdens today. That you know that your future is in God's hands, not somebody else's opinion about you. Even those condemned most by society see the future as clear as a blue sky. So remember, in this text, we started with Jesus cleansing the temple. Oh, yeah, cleansing the past. By whose authority? By the guy who defeated death on Good Friday and rose from the dead on Easter. That's Jesus. That's whose authority. May these words help all of us be more open to forgiveness, more open to forgive, to open someone else's future, and celebrate that with joy. It is an amazing thing. It really is an amazing thing when you read this text and when you hear what God has done for us. And so this next hymn we're going to sing is really kind of about stuff being amazing. It is an amazing grace that we claim. Amen. Hymn number 779.